So, let's start.
Okay, good.
Thanks very much for the invitation.
This is for sure. It's a pleasure. So, yeah, right. So I wrote already, so it's a Blackboard talk, as you can see, in part at least. So I've written already the outline on the Blackboard. So it will deal with long wavelengths and long temporal time correlation functions of exciton polariton systems, so two-dimensional driven open quantum systems. And the motivation comes actually from what is well known about equilibrium two-dimensional systems at a finite temperature, finite noise level in that case. In particular, we have this paradigm that at low temperature correlations decay algebraically. So that's essentially the spin wave dynamics that gives rise to that. And at high temperature, one finds exponentially decaying correlations. That's probably the expected case, where one has no gapless spin waves anymore. The responses in these systems, and so one can always ask essentially two questions about correlations in a system, so like a photon output in quantum optics, observable where one doesn't disturb the system while measuring. And the second kind of observable that one can focus on is responses, where essentially like a transmission experiment where you send in a weak probe to the system and then look how it reacts. So the response signature of this low temperature phase is a finite superfluid stiffness that one has in these systems. And again, here, the low temperature region is characterized by the finite one, and at high temperatures, the signal goes away. And the connection between these two limiting cases here is actually by this Kosterlitz-Tauless transition, often a vortex unbinding, and so small dipoles of vortices which are interacting logarithmically finally proliferate, and that's really an entropic effect where entropy gains over interaction energy. So what we will do here essentially is ask this set of questions, or I mean ask how this paradigm has to be transformed if one looks at an out of equilibrium context. Okay, so here this brings me to the outline. I mean, the nice thing is that such physics, such out of equilibrium driven physics, is actually realized in these exciton polariton systems. So in particular, I mean, I've organized this now more as a tutorial style, or like a lecture. I will in particular point out in which precise sense do these systems break the equilibrium conditions that one typically has. And then I will change gears and point out the physics of this Cardan-Parisi-Sang equation, which was originally invented to describe the roughening of surfaces. So it's a kind of generalization of Brownian motion of point particles to surfaces. And I will then bring these two things together. We find that these exciton polariton systems at the longest wavelengths actually map to the KPZ equation in the spin wave approximation. And then we'll discuss the implications of this finding for these three aspects here, correlation function, superfluidity, and Kosterlitz-Tauless transition. Let's see how far we can get. I'm pretty sure this year I've prepared it on the notes, and there I have some slides for that. But depending on how many questions there are, I can also drop this or maybe do it in private later on. Okay, so let me start with this exciton polariton systems, abbreviated with this X. And formulate, I mean, we've seen this in this conference, a dynamic equation describing the system. So it's this stochastic in the semi-classical limit, which is appropriate for the system, stochastic Gross-Pitayevsky equation for actually the degrees of freedom, these lower polaritons. So first the equation, and then I briefly remind how this comes about. So we look at the time evolution of this polariton amplitude, which is generated and then on equal footing by coherent dynamics. So this part here, this notation will become clear in a second, as this is twice, 1/2 effective mass for these things. This is a diffusion constant that is typically very small, but we want to treat it systematically on equal footing. Then we have here something which takes the form of a chemical potential, but that essentially defines a rotating frame for the systems. And we also have an imaginary part here some damping part, which is essentially physically gamma, so a loss strength, single particle losses, minus single particle pumping. And we have here also two body terms, coherent elastic collisions and two body losses, which come with this nonlinearity. That whole thing here lies the field, and then we have some noise. And so where does this equation come from? If we have here, look at energy and a two-dimensional in-plane momentum, then one has typically these two branches which come from a hybridization of the photon degrees of freedom and exciton degrees of freedom, which define these polariton branches. And just to make sure where these terms come from, yeah, one can, for example, pump coherently this upper polariton degrees of freedom, then in terms of a cascade mechanism, the lower polariton will be incoherently fed by this mechanism, by the cascaded relaxation mechanism. That's its effective pump rate here. Then, of course, one has single particle incoherent losses from this lower polariton branch because there's an admixture of photons in this and they go out by a leaky cavity. And you also have, so to say, combined two, at the same time, two body losses, three body losses. We just take the up to the two body case here. Okay, so that's essentially where this equation comes from here. Just to be specific with this noise level, this is a Markovian noise where the expectation the noise vanishes, a complex random number here, and the correlations.
You're putting in a nonlinear loss mechanism?
Yes. It's like from expanding, so to say, the pump denominator. And so, I mean, typically one has something like 1 over 1 plus phi square alpha. If you expand
so
that.
So steady state.
Exactly. Yeah. So that would be something that if you have some dynamics in this upper polariton branch and you eliminate this, then you...
And if the pump is not homogeneous, then you have to have spatial dependence and all that.
That's right, yeah, but we are focused here really on this long wavelength behavior that is actually, of course, that will be provided cutoff for our considerations, you know, the finite size of... The... Mm-hmm.
So you don't have multiplicative noise in this at all? Or
I mean, multiplicative noise in this Markovian classical limit, it will just be a subleading correction.
What about gamma? Is it uniform or position dependent?
Position dependent, you mean?
Yeah.
No, that's, well, on the level, I mean, we want to look at now at the simple most situation, yeah, where huge spot size, where the system is pumped, and we make the approximation that is homogeneous. I mean, actually, to model.
In linear equations, it's not always good. Even if you look on large scales, small scales can be important.
You mean disorder, or? I mean, for example,
Not only when they make super lattices, this thing can have the same dependence as super lattice periodicity.
That's right. But I mean, a regular lattice structure would be not so important at the long wavelength limit. I mean, I think what you definitely point out, if there's disorder in these rates, then that's something that could really affect the long wavelength.
If you have additional periodic potential, you have to take into account that gamma is also not uniform.
Yeah, but that would be a very short distance variation of this, or not.
So, when Bell structure is different, and this thing changes, but anyway.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, maybe. I would say, so to say, if we look at a lattice system, yeah, with a certain, regular periodicity, then, if I look at the very long wavelength physics, yeah, of that, the band curvature effects also typically don't matter for the long wavelength behavior, and I would expect. So this is something that is true for
Bloch waves, which contain long wavelengths and Bloch function, and Bloch functions are not trivial in this problem, which is nonlinear, was it? Anyway.
Okay, then maybe we consider it as an approximation.
I think you can say I'm looking at a homogeneous
system
into the homogeneously pumped and the big large system.
Yeah.
Then this is.
And I think, as far as I understand, what is really an issue is what could be disorder in this rates here, but not the spatial modulation now. So I think that's, at least for these models, we're interested here.
Sebastian, yes. For the two photon losses, the associated noise term is...
The associated noise term is actually, that's a good point. I mean, it's so to say, irrelevant in the sense of long wavelength power counting. What it would have as an effect, there would be a mean field shift. You would have actually, you would have a term psi, term like that, psi square, something like that could occur. But that, I mean, would give a mean field shift to this U decay rate here. So that's not what we need to consider. And else, we're discussing about this non-Gaussian noise. But again, I mean, in the sense of long wavelength power counting, this is irrelevant. OK, good. I mean, I still didn't write this correlator here. And actually, this is twice as a scale, let's say, sigma. So this is T minus T prime. So this is Markovian and short range correlated here, like that. OK, so now let's rewrite. Let's bring this equation in a bit more compact form and introduce essentially two kind of Hamiltonian or Landau-Ginzburg functionals, one of which describes dissipation, and the other one of which describes the reversible, the coherent dynamics with, and that's why I choose this notation here, H alpha is R alpha, so we just have this kind of mass term, gap term, for both dissipation and coherent. I've explained the physical meaning of them. Then we have kinetic contribution, and we write the nonlinearity in this way, where now alpha is either this coherent or the dissipative contribution to dynamics. And you see here very clearly in which sense this they really come up on equal footing. Let me now discuss three crucial or structural ingredients that this equation has, and each of which, and you can ask me again, where does this really enter, is crucial for the physics that I want to point out in this context. First thing is phase rotation symmetry. So U1 phase rotations. So that means, in other words, that we don't have any coherent forcing on this problem. So that's why we have this phase rotation symmetry. So I have T and X, I theta, T and X, and actually the same transformation law for the noise. Then you see that the equation that can be factored out of the equation of motion. That. And the implication of the presence of this symmetry is actually the existence of a long wavelength Goldstone mode. So that's very important because we'll finally see that the Goldstone mode out of equilibrium becomes nonlinear and gives rise to this KPZ equation. That's why I'm pointing it out, this point. So implication there exists a Goldstone mode. And that's really very simple way of seeing that. I mean, you can see it in mean field theory, but it holds beyond mean field theory. Mean field theory, where, so to say, we neglect all the spatial dependence, or we look at the stationary state, so we forget about the time dependence, and we omit the noise, homogeneous, temporally and spatially homogeneous situation, where we just have square plus Wheeler dimensionary part not square, and that one can see it as a derivative of a scalar potential with real and imaginary parts in this case, which only depends from the amplitude absolute square, and from the imaginary part, you determine the state of the system at the mean field level, psi naught square is minus Rd Ud. And so you see this Rd has to be negative to get a finite mean field condensate amplitude, meaning that the pumping is dominating over the loss. This fixes the state. And the real part is seen to be just, I mean, this RC adjusts, if you want, such that this is a choice of a rotating frame. And now back to this picture, how do we see this Goldstone mode here? Yeah, we need to look at the equation that fixes the state. And if you look at the potential landscape, then clearly you get this nice Mexican hat picture, where you see, because this potential, the strength of it depends on the modulus, you have this conventional bottom of the bottle of wine. And you can see clearly here that this, well, this is here the state for a fixed, for a given spontaneously chosen phase, we have here this gapless direction. So this is this Goldstone mode. The second important ingredient is actually the openness of the system, the fact that this system doesn't have particle number conservation.
I'm confused about the U1. It's probably stupid. The U1 symmetry.
Yeah.
So if I apply e to the I theta shift, shouldn't noise be shifted additively? Because, I mean, if I just stick that into psi, is the transformation of noise, is that correct right there?
Sorry, I just been stuck on this from the beginning.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, in that, if you do it like that, you factor out one global phase. Right. You just cancel it.
No, but the time, I'm worried about the time derivative acting on e to the I theta.
Yeah, this is a global.
Oh,
it's global theta.
Oh, it's fixed in time.
Yeah. Actually, there is actually also a time local bearing of it, yeah, which, so to say, which redefines this RC.
Okay.
So this is a rotating frame.
Okay.
No, no, but else it's important not to put here a T or X.
Okay, sorry about
good.
The other question is concerning the constraints you get from imaginary and real part. I didn't get why from the real part you only get a constraint on the modulus, or?
Oh, square.
Square, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, yeah, so this here. Yeah. Oh, maybe, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. But the state is fixed really by the decay processes and the rest, okay, this is adaption of a rotating frame. If you look at, so to say, phase differences or so, then this will not show up. Okay. some more of the model, or?
So are they compatible with constraints? Or no? Because
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. So this here is determined by these precise parameters.
Right.
And then this here, so now this is fixed.
Okay.
Yeah, and that defines the value of RC if you want to be in some rotating frame, which doesn't evolve. You're sitting now in a you're going with a rotating frame. And if you look at, so to say, phase correlators, you will always see that you get differences in time which don't see that. So in that sense, it's like a gauge choice. So, okay, the second important ingredient is that this system is really open. So in the full, in two senses, the first, no particle number. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe somehow the most trivial point, but it tells you something on the, I mean, I've argued that there must be this zero mode, this gapless mode, but this condition here tells you about the nature of this zero mode, yeah, and the implication here. Is that this Goldstone is diffusive at leading order. So omega is like I D.
Sebastian, probably silly, but I mean, if you don't have any two photon losses, shouldn't the nonlinear term, the dispersive interaction, should also saturate the
amplitude, isn't it? The nonlinear term is what does it. So this is essentially this curve, this up.
But you have the amplitude determined by RD over UD. So the two photon losses seem to be.
Sorry. Yeah. I mean, it's really the most. So just this here. Yeah. I put it plainly wrong.
Okay, but in bracket. In the constraints, then it's the denominator is UD plus or what exactly?
UD zero.
If UD is zero.
Oh, UD is zero. Yeah. Then I mean, would mean you have a very it would be far out here, yeah, indeed. And I'm okay, that would mean that you have a large condensator.
Without a frequency dependent amplification mechanism, without UD, you would get.
And then you get somehow, you get a runaway.
That's amplification that is.
Of course, this model is very rough from a macroscopic point of view. If you add the frequency dependent amplification, then the term matters.
Yeah, it's a function of the response.
Yeah.
To have the condenser, otherwise it's only below threshold.
May I ask about diffusive mode? Usually this is written based on the fact that total number of particles is conserved.
Yeah.
No, so if it is not conserved, then...
Then the leading is diffusive? Yeah, why?
No. It is diffusive when it is conserved.
Oh, when it's conserved?
Because
then
when you put a pure called zero, you get dm dt of integral over.
But this Goldstone mode then for particle number conserving is a sound mode, yeah. Of course, you have also diffusive.
But what I want to tell is the diffusive equation is just a reflection of the fact that number of particles is conserved. Because if it is not conserved, I need to imagine.
I think you mean something else. I mean, I agree with you that, I mean, let me tell you. I mean, we are discussing now the long wavelength behavior of the order parameter, yeah, of the order parameter fluctuations. And then if particle number is conserved, then actually, as a CF closed system, omega is actually C times. So we have this sound mode that you get, for example, also from
Bogoliubov. It's acceleration of momentum, not number of particles.
Yeah, but it's correct. That also you have, of course, in this game here, you have additional slow modes which become diffusive.
Diffusive mode appears when you violate conservation of total momentum, but still have conservation of number of particles. Because if you not have, if your number of particles is not conserved, then dm dt, in addition to this diffusive term, d times gradient square, has also m divided by tau. And this term will give you a constant term, Q independent, into this equation.
I think, I mean, now, a constant, I would exclude in the case that we have something like this symmetry breaking situation. Then you should not have a decay. Then you really, you have a diffusion.
You have fluctuations of total number of particles, which don't exist in this equation. In this equation, the total number of particles is time independent.
In which equation?
Which you wrote, omega is equal to id times q squared. Because this equation means that instead of omega, I write id dt. Instead of d, I write dq squared, id gradient square, and multiply all by density fluctuation and get diffusive equation. But you have additional term which is decay, is a number of particles divided by gamma.
Not for this Goldstone mode. Actually, I mean, that would be what you're describing would be a gap term.
Can I just ask, where did this equation finite. Come from? Not from this equation.
Yeah. This equation
dq squared.
This equation comes from, for example, decomposing this into phase and amplitude.
Yes.
And this amplitude dynamics is not. I agree with you. Yeah. That I mean, the density fluctuations have the behavior that you describe. The density fluctuations, of course,
but phase and current is the same. Density fluctuations have the same decay as current fluctuation, because you just get another gradient.
So definitely in this case, what I can tell you, so we can derive something like dtn of x, yeah, and in the number conserving system, you can write it as a total gradient of something. But now, yeah, when particle number is not conserved, you get here constant terms in addition, which are not of this gradient from that. So at q equals zero, you have something. But here, you look at the density, and what I'm looking at is the phase in this picture here. Yeah, what you describe is a density, that's what I'm saying.
Gradient of phase is current, j.
Right.
Actually, if you take that equation and just do a trivial linearization, you get exactly that dispersion. This has been obtained by several groups just by taking Gross-Peterski equation and doing the standard.
I mean, you're entirely right that, I mean, if I do that, I will do it. The phase amplitude representation of this equation, of course, you then get an evolution equation for the density. And that is actually indeed not gapless. Yeah, so at q equals zero, doesn't vanish. So this is really damping. But now still there is a phase. And if we have this symmetry breaking situation, then this is just diffusing. It's a very important point. OK. Good. So what is actually, I mean, even more important, yeah, is that these systems don't have energy conservation.
So the risk of belaboring this, sorry, it seems like...
Again, sorry?
Sorry, as I was going to say, at the risk of belaboring this, I think calling that law diffusive is a bit misleading because there's no conservation law that requires the fit. You know, in other words, if you put it... So I'm sorry, let me just ask a question. If the answer is yes, then no more questions. So if you put a different spectrum of the noise term, you could get arbitrarily q, not q squared, but q to the 22nd power, if you put a sufficiently strong noise. In other words, all you're saying is that the dynamics of the phase mode is just, it presumably just follows however the noise kicks it around.
But the noise doesn't matter in this. This is just a mean field result.
I mean, the noise, I mean, okay,
I can
this
put
is
a strong noise. I can make this forget where it is in much faster. I mean,
I would agree that
unrelated to the conservation law.
Definitely,
it's
I agree. When you
realize the Google, it's analogous to the Google loop of.
I think the question, the confusion that. I think I'm right. There's no concept, there's no, nothing that commutes with anything that guarantees.
But that's his additions here.
That's right. You're saying that it's so depending on the dynamical detail, I understand that there's mean field approximation due to this. You could have gotten a different answer there.
We can say we look at a Markovian noise level, that means that this noise level is not scaling with momentum.
Right.
If you have some crazy scaling of the noise level with momentum or with frequency, then I make no statement here. So,
okay.
I mean, so but it's contained in the noise correlator that I wrote.
So, but Jacob pointed out that this result you can obtain on mean field level, there is no noise. So, I don't think it depends on the noise at all. I mean, this is a very.
But if you take a non trivial noise into account, it may change. Yeah?
But the reason
here we are lucky that.
You're talking about spatially dependent noise, right?
Or
spatially dependent or frequency dependent.
You're taking just a simple. You know, spatially and temporally independent.
But the really robust thing is that the q equals zero mode must sort of not, the q equals zero limit's got to be zero, right? Because that's the
goal.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So let's now look at, so to say, the fact that we don't have only a Hamiltonian, which governs the dynamics in this system, so don't have energy conservation. So that's really saying that the Hamiltonian is not the only generator of dynamics. And I would like to look at two extreme limits of this equation, which are equilibrium, and then so they point out what that means for our equation. So one obvious equilibrium limit is when we set brute force, all the dissipative dynamics, I mean, to zero. And also we forget about the noise now. Then this reproduces, of course, the Gross-Peterski, also GPE. Which is, so to say, well known as, so to say, describing bosons, weakly interacting bosons at zero temperature. Let's put this in a plot where I plot here the real parts of all the couplings. Here the imaginary part of the set of couplings that I have. Yeah, so this could be this E, this one, this one. This is the imaginary part, and here the real part of all of them. Then, of course, this situation here is described by all couplings here lying entirely on this real axis here. The other extreme limit that I can look at is when the model is purely dissipative. So I set this all the coherent dynamics to zero. What this equation then describes is this so-called model A of the Halperin and Hohenberg classification for classical equilibrium dynamical phase transitions. And you see that in that case, of course, I had to align all couplings on that axis here.
So what is G?
G is, so to say, I mean, the set of the real of the coupling parameters that define the dynamical equation. And so the G one would be, say, this diffusion rate. The next one would be the loss, effective loss on pumping rate, the two-body inelastic collision. And the real parts, I collect them in this collection of the Gs. This is the real part of it. And I just make a plot. Yeah? What you can see then is actually both these cases, as I've said, they really correspond to equilibrium situation. What I will argue now is essentially that in any case when all the couplings are located on one single ray in the plane here, in the complex plane, then you have equilibrium conditions. So both these correspond to equilibrium conditions. And more generally, it can be shown that equilibrium dynamics obtains for the situation where these two effective Hamiltonians here lie on one ray with some real number. Okay, then we get this single aligned situation.
What's the meaning of this diagram? Is this some kind of an RG flow or?
No, this is just so to say. I'm just classifying now under which circumstance one has so to say equilibrium conditions, detailed balance, and under which conditions.
What is the arrow?
That's just the value of the coupling. Yeah, for example, this coupling here has real part. It's graphical, but
excuse really me, the point. Sebastian, in the case of resonant coherent excitation, in general, the Bugulub of excitation spectrum is different from equilibrium, but if you choose the excitation parameters, you can recover the Bugulub of some mode as a particular case. Is this an analogous property for
the Bogoliubov
in coherent case?
In this case we don't have this Bogoliubov. Yeah. For example, the sound mode is replaced by diffusive mode.
Yeah.
Or you mean that if in the framework of this dynamical field theory you can reproduce the Bogoliubov?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the number conserving case, actually it's not entirely trivial. Yeah. You have to have an additional slow mode, which relates to particle number conservation. I think I don't want to touch this issue, but it's doable. Yeah? So you need three soft modes to recover the Bogoliubov spectrum at a finite temperature.
So I sorry.
Yeah.
I still don't understand this. What is this? I mean, I understand you say.
So let me put here, for example, this is this R D. This is the K D, and this is the U D. Just the length of. Of course, it scrambles up dimensions.
But what does it mean when they are on this diagonal?
That means that both they have both real and imaginary part. So that's
by definition, they are real.
No, I mean, I was was looking here. This is case one.
It's a constraint. It's a constraint line.
Their argument is the same.
I mean, Hakan, maybe you see it from, I mean, what can happen, of course, why not this? Yeah?
Yeah. Completely independent.
And that's actually out of equilibrium. So that's a point. There is a constraint.
Conflicts, let's say, diffuse.
But equilibrium does not mean that.
You divided the Hamiltonian into a real part, and so you have an HC and an HD.
Yeah.
Right? And those are defined by.
Yeah, yeah. But of course, you in an out of equilibrium. Yeah, that's really crucial. In an out of equilibrium context, you just don't have that all the couplings are proportional to each other. This is a highly strong constraint. If you think of, I mean, you have five parameters, and reversible or irreversible, and then I'm telling you now, so to say, only if you have this kind of seeming fine tuning of this dissipative and this coherent reversible part, only then the system describes equilibrium conditions.
What do you call equilibrium? Steady state?
We're discussing here the physics of the stationary state of this problem. Yes. So if we have, if I say non-equilibrium condition, I mean a non-equilibrium stationary state, which comes about because the system is microscopically driven. Yeah, so
but at the limiting cycle, you will also call
limiting
it
cycle can be, but
that but will, you will call it equilibrium or not equilibrium.
Yeah, I'm not considering this in this talk. I would definitely consider say this is non-equilibrium because it's only
so
because it doesn't.
So equilibrium means time independent. Non-equilibrium means time dependent.
No, time. No, sorry. Non-equilibrium means I mean I can have also stationary flux equilibrium states. Yeah, which are non-equilibrium according to what I'm just working out here. I wanted, so the particular condition, I mean, you can have stationary states which don't obey detailed balance.
So what you're saying is totally clear.
This equation now obeys the detailed balance.
If we have this single rate, detailed balance is obtained.
Your definition of equilibrium
condition. Yeah. Yes, if you would have gamma dependent on point, you will violate the detailed balance immediately because, if from this point you have more losses than from this, then if you have the same pumping, you will get flow from here to here. So it has little to do with with equilibrization. It's just a matter of definition anyway.
No, I think it's a big difference. I mean, then I have to restrict to homogeneous couplings and so on. Yeah, and I can, so to say, still make a difference in a dynamic equation which describes equilibrium dynamics and one which describes, so to say, non-equilibrium dynamics. And I can also ask how does this, does detailed balance, is this a property of the stationary state or not? I mean, that's the notion of non-equilibrium I want to look at. Even in the case that I have completely homogeneous couplings, and I think really the most microscopic thing that I can tell you is that the very microscopic description of these systems, there's always a time-dependent Hamiltonian underlying this. So that means the system is driven. And then I coarse-grain this system, and then I arrive at a picture, actually, where these couplings do not lie on one way, but rather are scattered.
So equilibrium means no vertices, and non-equilibrium means that you have vertices.
Vertices?
Yeah.
No, I can have vertices, I can also... that's
no,
actually...
Then you don't have detailed equilibrium if you have... circular current, you don't have detailed equilibrium.
So, that's an interesting point, but definitely you may look at, so to say, vortices in and out of equilibrium. Maybe I can define a bit better the conditions under which I would say it's non-equilibrium.
So, Sebastian, there's first of all. You're actually going to a rotating frame, assuming that there's one condensing mode, right? And you're going to the rotating frame of that mode. It's actually a limit cycle because you're going to the rotating frame of that mode. It becomes a stationary. But you might have a situation where these equations have multimode solutions, which are true limit subgroups where you cannot go to a rotating frame. I guess these are out of the reach of what you're describing here. No?
Also, it is not the situation that I'm looking at right now. Yeah, but I mean, I'm now just. I mean, it's really something general. You can test, so to say, given the information that I'm providing, you can test whether the situation you're describing falls into this class of equilibrium or not. Yeah, so, right. So, what's the intuition? Yeah, why under this circumstance? It's actually very simple. Why this special circumstance here describes equilibrium conditions? Yeah, the intuition is simply this one. You can rescale the equation of motion with z equals man minus I of this specific ratio here. Then what this does is what generates the time evolution in the system goes over into I. So I dt square plus r. Yeah, and you see that, I mean, this here, this describes then still the coherent evolution, but this here describes a damping into a Gibbs state. Because on the other hand, then, of the equation of motion, I just have one Hamiltonian standing, and the stationary state will then be a Gibbs state with this e to the minus beta h. Yeah, which is essentially the Hamiltonian, that just one Hamiltonian in the system. So I think that gives you some intuition. But if you can also do this a bit more formally, and I think it's useful to know also with respect to your question, how can we see it by looking at the equation of motion, whether this equation describes in stationary state equilibrium or non-equilibrium conditions. Yeah, we can map always these stochastic partial differential equations, even if they are nonlinear. We can map them into a functional integral representation, the so-called Martin Sigia Rose functional integral representation. Of this nonlinear stochastic dynamics, which reads something like that. I just needed to introduce the variables. So that is the original polariton field here, and then I have in addition a noise field in this description. So roughly this noise field corresponds to the noise that enters the equation of motion. And equilibrium conditions are now seen to. One can represent this in terms of a symmetry that's known for this classical system equilibrium conditions is equivalent to of a symmetry which is actually time reversal and time translations, a combination of that. So the symmetry here takes the field variable time reversal to x and this noise field to the noise field of time reversed, and then some translation in time. And so this here is a representation really of doing one in a row time reversal and time translations, and one can actually also see that the charge that is conserved for this is energy. So this is really a symmetry that ensures energy conservation.
So does it mean that you exclude vertices from your solutions?
Do you see it from that, or?
No, if you make time.
That's quite interesting, yeah, because there's really something. I think I would have to think about that a bit more.
There are vortex, anti-vortex pairs.
Yeah, no, I mean, we will actually make the point, yeah, if time allows, which I don't believe. I mean, but we can discuss that, yeah, that, I mean, I mean, I would see the I mean, vortices, this Kosellitz-Tauless transition, and this is of course something that, so to say, happens in equilibrium as well. And I mean, how this symmetry transformation has to be adapted and to be applicable to these defects, I'm not so sure.
No, but definitely we can. What I want to tell is that if you consider only solutions that are completely time reversal symmetric, then you exclude vertices. Because vertices violate this time reversal symmetry. I don't know how you will then treat it.
Okay, no, a very good point. I think I have to think about in more detail.
Can I ask a technical question about the symmetry? What have you done with the initial conditions? Because to prove the symmetry, you have to say
stationary
something
about.
So you just imagine it's a stationary state and you
forget the details of the initial state. Yeah. No, I mean, it's really something that you do in the stationary state. Okay. So what the point is, okay, this if this is a symmetry of the action that is associated to this problem, then you can see that the implication of it is that you get fluctuation dissipation theorems of classical fluctuation dissipation theorems of arbitrary order, and that means, of course, that if it's at arbitrary order, that the system really obeys global detailed balance. So, in other words, it is not kind of a fine-tuning that these couplings here lie on one single ray. I think a proper picture is actually to think about this problem of microscopically being initialized here with a purely coherent dynamics, and then you have scattering processes which give rise to dissipation. But this dissipation will always respect, will just essentially rotate these couplings here in a situation with just a Hamiltonian away from the real axis. So that describes the onset of dissipative dynamics. And actually, if you go in a classical system to a critical point, then the RG flow will take these couplings here entirely to lie on the imaginary axis. And so that you can at least qualitatively understand, so to say, this the emergence of this classical models here as forgetting about the coherent dynamics with the process of decoherence finally leading to this stationary state, which is on the imaginary axis. Okay. And also, since we're really discussing a symmetry, this property of all couplings on one ray is not a fine-tuning, but is actually protected by the symmetry here. Okay. Good. So let me again just summarize. And so equilibrium dynamics is a situation where all these couplings on in this ray. So dissipative interpretation, coherent dynamics, non-independent. Rather, one should look at the dissipation in this system as something that is generated in, so to say, perturbation theory of the purely coherent dynamics. While a non-equilibrium situation, we don't have this symmetry present, so we don't have any constraints on where these couplings may be located here. Okay, so this is non-equilibrium. And now it's interesting to study if, so to say, if we look at long wavelengths in this system, if there's any, so to say, manifest consequence of the microscopic difference between the couplings lying like that, so equilibrium conditions, or if there's some spread, does the system remember this when we go to large scales, or does this completely fade out and at large distances everything looks like equilibrium? And to answer this question, I would now like to first switch gears and introduce this Kadar-Parisi-Sang equation briefly to you, so KTZ equation. And then we come back essentially to these pictures and connect that. Yeah. So I mean, we can start from point particles where we have Brownian motion. So that would be m of t and x. In some noisy environment. And the question that these people asked actually, well, what happens when we go from the Brownian motion of point particles to the Brownian stochastic motion of entire surfaces? And there's actually a nice geometric effect that comes really from the surface that makes a difference, that introduces here a non-irrelevant non-linearity in this equation here. So the question, analog. Brownian. Surfaces. So, and I do a picture up here. It's really a geometric effect. And we'll see how that really immediately describes a driven, a non-equilibrium situation. So here, I plot a height profile of how that evolves in time when I deposit particles on a tilted surface. Now you immediately see, if this takes place in some gravitational field, I get some shear, which for a tilt angle which is finite really gives a shear to these particles. They want to move down the side, while if I tilt it completely with theta equals zero, then I have a balance of forces all the time. Although I will, of course, see that the interface grows with time. But, so you can see this nonlinear effect on depositing particles here with some rate lambda from above, the geometry of this problem. So here, the height, the growth is perpendicular to this surface. So this is a ds here. Here is a dh of this variable. Here I have another theta, that is dx in this direction. This is x, and again dh. So the growth ds is lambda dt with this deposition rate here, and the geometry you can relate the growth in the vertical direction, ds 1 plus h dx square, which is roughly lambda dt. So with this deposition rate, 1 minus 1 half x square. Okay, so now we get, and you see that this is really this effect that we're dealing with the surface here. Now the Brownian motion gets corrected by these terms proportional to lambda. It's corrections, nonlinear one, dth. Now this, we're looking at this case is diffusion, the one which we had previously, plus lambda minus lambda halves, and now this nonlinearity. If I go to more dimensions, it looks like that. And again, we have this Markovian noise. Okay, let's now discuss a few properties of this equation, which give some orientation in this problem. And these properties, they can actually be gleaned from a nice analogy with transformation properties of a phase. And that's actually quite convenient, because later on we will actually see that indeed the phase dynamics of this exciton polariton systems is precisely given by this equation here. So let's discuss the properties of this equation by a phase analogy. So, for example, if I would look at the properties of a phase of a complex field written this way, so where now this H corresponds to the phase theta. Yeah? First of all, we have this rotating or co-moving frame transformation. That is, so to say, a time local H in the phase picture, so where we would have lambda t for the complex field, which means for the phase that is just shifted by this time-dependent quantity here. So that means actually that's important, yeah, because it tells you that we can actually absorb this lambda here, which physically describes, so to say, the growth, the base, so the average growth of this interface. We can just absorb it, and in this phase analogy, okay, if we absorb it and forget about this here, we are just putting ourselves in the co-moving frame of the growing interface. So lambda can be absorbed.
So are you making an analogy between this particular equation mm-hmm. and the phase variable of the polar Condon state?
That will come out in the end, yeah. But now at the moment I'm using it more as a formal analogy to discuss some nice properties of this KVZ equation, to bring it into the form that is typically in the literature. You can see from this, I mean, formal analogy, that everything I know about a phase, yeah, moving frame transformation, global phase rotation invariance, Galilean symmetry, all that morphs into this equation just by using this analogy. But at that point, it's just a mathematical thing. But maybe give some intuition of this co-moving frame. Good. So then we have here. So we've written this equation in a bit more, in a bit nicer form. And in particular, you see now, so to say, that the true effect, the true non-trivial physical effect of this lambda is really directly reflecting this non-equilibrium drive conditions. Yeah? Because if I tilt this angle down there, then this term here has to vanish. There's nothing that shears this h in x direction, and then the nonlinearity goes away. So we can, and the other effect of lambda is really trivial, just so to say, the growing, the average growth of the surface. But this is really how drive, yeah, how this is accelerated here, how drive enters the problem and shows you that this is really non-equilibrium behavior. So, right. Yeah. So lambda, so in particular, that's really the physical consequence. Lambda has a non-trivial effect, namely providing a non-linearity, which is forbidden under equilibrium conditions, effect only under non-equilibrium conditions. Okay, good. Another thing that is important in this equation. Yeah, another important point is, yeah, I think I abbreviated a bit here, is that this equation here has no gap term. It's nothing that provokes an exponential decay of the momentum, slow momentum modes here. Everything is gapless, and that is the same, the phase analogy, simply that this is a property that is really protected, even if you go to long wavelengths, is reflected by the scale invariance of this equation is global protected by the global gauge invariance of the phase. So theta plus some constant phase. Yeah, if we require this to be a symmetry of the problem, then we will never generate something which doesn't contain any kind of gradients or derivatives. And that means actually that all kinds of correlation functions in this problem, they will be, so to say, algebraically decaying. Okay. So let me discuss now, I mean, to be a bit quicker here, let me now discuss what is well known about the long wavelength behavior of this nonlinear problem here. And that is actually the large scale physics of this KPZ from an RG approach, where one gradually integrates the short distance fluctuations. And one can introduce here, let me write this, it's a flow equation as a function of going to larger distances here, 2 minus d. So something special at d equals 2 happens. G square, where G, this nonlinearity, summarizes the non-equilibrium strength, in particular for equilibrium conditions, has to vanish, delta over d cube. So this is the noise level in this equation, Markovian noise level, and this is the diffusion constant here. And what one can find in rather simple perturbative RG approach is this kind of phase diagram as a function of dimension. This is two dimensions, is special. And we find here the behavior that even if we initialize the system here at small non-equilibrium perturbation, the importance of non-equilibrium becomes even more pronounced if we coarse grain to long wavelengths, yeah, since, so to say, this parameter here flows to infinity. The same is actually in one dimension. While in, say, three dimension, if we only perturb the system weakly out of equilibrium, it will actually flow to equilibrium at large distances, so we forget about the non-equilibrium microscopic nature. And, okay, diagram to be completed is like that. Yeah. So here, this is called in the terms of the KPZ equation, the rough phase or strong non-equilibrium. And this here is called the smooth, where essentially at long wavelengths it's appropriate to think about the problem indeed as just a diffusing Brownian motion phase. So this is effective equilibrium conditions.
Sebastian,
yes.
What is delta in the definition of
delta? Delta is the noise Markovian. Noise level of the KPZ equation. Yeah? It's also a noisy equation. The correlator of this here is proportional to two-point correlator.
For the equation.
Yes. Okay. So finally, let's connect this equation here to these exciton polariton systems. Technically, really simple. And okay, so now the connection. So we go back to this driven Gross-Peter-Efsky equation, yeah, and decompose our field, the polariton field, into density fluctuations and phase fluctuations. Okay, what we find then is two equations of motions. This is chi minus 2eud. Let me just put them. You see then really immediately what happens. And some diffusion of the phase, real part of the original noise in the KBZ, in the Gross-Pitayevsky equation. And the second equation is now the equation for the phase. Looks almost the same, with just exchanges in the couplings here. M naught. Square plus imaginary of this noise. Okay, what we can see from this equation, okay, here I have done an approximation. I have only considered these density fluctuations to linear order, but this is fully appropriate because you see that this dynamics here is really fast. This is really damping out quickly with this finite scale at long wavelength here. And so I can actually solve this equation by adiabatic elimination. So the first equation here is gapped with this time scale here. So I do an adiabatic elimination. So I say that this here has reached the stationary state already way before this equation here has finished its dynamics. And then I can insert this chi here, which I get from above, and get indeed this equation for the phase, where we have this ordinary diffusion, but now also this nonlinearity, which indeed measures now the non-equilibrium conditions. First of all, I've made it as a general argument that this can be like that. We can have, so to say, non-equilibrium conditions described in this equation here, because at the microscopic level, we indeed have this spread of coupling constants, and we don't have detailed balance. And you can also see it explicitly if you look at this value of lambda, which emerges here. You see here 2kc, so this effective mass term, and then the ratio, a ratio of two ratios, is our u, is the ratio of the two-body inelastic losses over the two-body elastic collisions, and the rk is the ratio of diffusion constant over effective mass term. And you see, if we have an equilibrium condition, these two guys here have to be exactly the same because they need to be aligned in the complex plane. And you see then in that circumstance, but only then, this really cancels out. And in a non-equilibrium situation, this would be a heavy fine-tuning. So you see it explicitly in this formula, consistent with the general argument. So lambda non-zero here, that's really the important message. Signals on equilibrium conditions. Okay, now let's look at the consequences of that.
You had also R, right? You had in your original equation, you had three pairs of.
Right, but they just don't enter in this nonlinear constant here.
So, but this lambda is different from the, I got the impression that lambda you talked about was a frequency of oscillation initially.
There's really two effects of this lambda. One is trivial, so to say, defining a co-moving frame of the interface. That's
so
the trivial effect.
The running frequency, right?
Yes.
Original running frequency.
Yeah, good. We get this equation here, but I don't see that, lambda in this place, and if it occurs like an addition here, it can be any lambda prime. This is a very specific model. I pointed out this co-moving frame symmetry, irrespective of the actual value of this lambda, can be completely decoupled from the lambda, that from the effect of lambda that comes to this shear. And that's really the non-trivial drive effect, because it's really, you see, that the system is forced, not in a force equilibrium. Okay, now let me look at the implications of this here. we generate a crossover length scale by which can be seen really by tracking this RG flow here. So I mean, this is a dimensionless number. So let me say here is 1. And I initialize my system in 2D with a very weak close to equilibrium conditions. I know that going to large wavelengths, this will be flow upwards. And there is some point, yeah, where, let me call it, defined by some length scale L star, where this coupling is of order 1. And that will set me a crossover scale between an almost equilibrium weak lambda regime and a strong non-equilibrium regime, which is dominated by this strong coupling fixed point here. So, and this scale is actually given some microscopic, like say a healing length. It's actually huge. For the assumption that we started with very weak non-equilibrium perturbation. So this here is actually the G at microscopic scales. And this here is like a macroscopic scale, maybe a healing length.
I'm sorry, there were so many changes of variables. Original gamma, non-Hermitian, does it enter to this length scale?
G is, and it enters, for example, via these parameters. All these parameters are complicated.
But you wrote Rosputayevsky equation.
So there was a gamma, there was a single particle loss rate or something like that.
So how it depends on gamma?
It's a complicated function of this. So this is a complicated function.
What are the asymptotics?
The asymptotics.
So very small gamma, very large gamma.
What you can say is that when gamma becomes large, then this scale actually becomes smaller, and that's intuitive. The stronger you, the stronger you have a decaying, so the short-lived polaritons means that this scale actually becomes smaller. So the non-equilibrium conditions are more strongly expressed there. I think if the polariton lifetime is in some sense also a measure of
so
the
importance. So this stability is basically lasing or not? This is stability that you found.
When you fine tune gamma, it will
change sign. You have lasing, or it's something different.
No, I mean lasing. Now we have to say, lasing. I would define it as a finite expectation value of this field. So that the photon as a polariton expectation value. That is something even in equilibrium, if you look at this as a continuous, as a mode, a laser with a continuum of spatial modes in two dimensions in equilibrium, I would even expect that the strict condensation is replaced by algebraic decay of the correlation functions in two dimensions equilibrium. Now I'm arguing that it's even worse out of equilibrium. And I'll show you exactly why.
So how it matters that the phase, how it matters.
No, okay. Maybe I put it like that. So we will study now, or maybe can I just follow these lines here and I will comment. So let's come to the interpretation and I will come back to that issue. Interpretation. We study this spatial correlation functions. So, and now, if I would have really condensation or lasing, I would expect that this here in the limit that x saturates into psi naught square. Now, in two dimensions equilibrium already, and that is actually because we are not don't have a single mode problem, but we have the continuum of spatial degrees of freedom, I would expect actually that this here decays algebraically, and the reason is simply, if we neglect the...
As a Costanis Taurus.
Exactly, yeah.
So what you're discussing is Costanis Taurus transition.
No, I'm discussing now, to say Costanis Taurus, So first of all, this is equilibrium, yeah? And here we have.
Yet there, so there'll be no constant.
So we are looking now at a situation at low temperature. Yes, here's some other coupling parameter in the system. We are looking now at for the analogy of the low temperature phase in equilibrium, but with this slight perturbation.
Temperature is the intensity of the noise.
Yes, noise level. Yes.
So it's basically pumping.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the difference is, yeah, as I've worked out, yeah, that we have, so to say, not equilibrium conditions. Yeah? Because we have the, we don't have detailed balance, although the stationary state is, although we have a stationary state. I mean,
stationary state, if you are below lasing, is without noise, basically psi equals zero.
Psi equals zero.
Can I just ask, can you put up the result first before?
Yeah.
Because you're not giving the result.
I was trying.
You're sort of advertising it without actually writing down the equation.
Okay,
that,
yeah,
good. That invites extra criticism for no reason.
Okay. So, we're looking in this approximation where we just look at phase correlations, yeah, and again, so to say, in a cumulant expansion here. Pointed out in the morning, yeah, that is just well approximated to leading order by this quadratic correlator here of the phase squared. Okay, and we can now look at the properties of this correlator here to get an impression how would this function here behave at the long distances. Yeah, and now we have the two regimes, as I was pointing out with this consideration here. Two regimes. First of all, when our length is much smaller than this scale where really non-equilibrium conditions hit in, then this lambda of L in this regime, let's put it much smaller than one, weak breaking of detailed balance. That means that the equilibrium at the low temperature or low noise level phase equilibrium, or also this Bogoliubov fixed point, is appropriate for looking at this phase correlator here. And I mean, of course, this theta is then logarithmic in x, and that means that the psi goes with an algebraic power law. Huh? However, if we look now at the regime where this length is much larger than this L star, that means that lambda of L is really large. Yeah, as it goes to this strong coupling non-equilibrium fixed point, and then the behavior is actually a bit different. Yeah, then we can evaluate this from what is known about the correlators in this KBZ problem, and in two dimensions it goes like that with chi 0.4 in 2D. So that means that this correlator here as a function of x is a stretched exponential. Yeah?
And your algebraic decay depends for L much more than L star, it depends on the level of noise, the critical exponent.
This critical exponent?
See, for
it's universal.
Yes, but it
should
depend on the temperature.
No, no, no. This does not. This is a universal number that doesn't depend on temperature. It's like a critical exponents at a finite temperature transition. They also depend on, don't depend on temperature.
What is
just depend on symmetries and dimension.
What is exponent too high?
Too high.
is chi smaller than 1?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Some exponential decay.
So what happens if I take limit x to 0, take derivative and square?
X to 0 is...
Then, does it mean that gradient theta squared is tending to infinity?
This one here, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This is the signature of... This is numerical analysis of this KBZ phase. It means that the surface becomes very rough.
I understand better the surface, but gradient of theta is curved. And what you are telling me is that mean squared...
This is not a great... No, I mean, in this limit, when x goes to 0, it doesn't make sense to look at it in this way. Not at all. Because, I mean, this is... I'm really... So let me plot this last plot here. Yeah? Of one last plot. Yeah. So this... this guy here. So we have some short as a function of x. We have, of course, some short distance... completely non-universal behavior, then we will see this x to the minus k algebraic decay. Then comes this scale L star, and only for distances below, beyond that, I'll have this e to the stretch exponential behavior. Yeah, so, I mean, this limit, and all these considerations are only valid for very large separations where I can use scaling arguments and, so to say, the point that this is, so to say, everything universal. But, I mean, to look at that as a, so to say, at short distances is not in the range of this.
Short means, say, zero, killing lengths.
Yeah.
So can I interrupt a second and go back to the previous question? You're saying that kappa for x smaller than L star does not depend on the temperature.
Yeah, it does.
Kappa? Oh, this is non-universal. Yeah.
So
this exponent in the yeah right. This is non is non-universal.
No, so this depends also on the level of noise then.
This one does, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you're
no, but you see, I mean, there's a big difference. I mean, universal is just the algebraic decay. Yeah, but for example, this kappa, it approaches 1/4 as you go to this transition. This 1/4 is universal.
It's 1/4 only near the transition.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, so kappa is non-universal here and goes to 1/4 there.
I'm sorry. Psi zero is usual healing length. Right?
Some small short distance.
Because usual healing length is the limit when superconducting or superfluid density goes to zero is divergent.
Okay.
So,
for example, yeah, it's definitely something on the order of the
of what.
Larger than lattice spacing, but...
But...
I see that, so to say, this is, so to say, the scale where things are strongly dependent on the precise system that you're in equilibrium, we will always have this algebraic behavior, and if you go to large enough distances, independent of what this scale is.
But you don't have condensate here. If you would have condensate, I would buy it. But you write formulas which are correct distances that are bigger than infinity. I mean,
Can I replace it by? Maybe by the length scale that is associated to the polariton lifetime or something like that?
Lifetime. You need just from dimension consideration.
That's why I'm the length scale associated.
Yeah,
like
you don't have density here because you can extract it only from mean square density, which itself depends on this length.
Good, but this is okay. This problem, so this phase amplitude decomposition here should be understood as, so to say, density fluctuations and not really condensate fluctuations, or not really condensate, but density plus small fluctuations of it. And then phase fluctuations. I mean, this derivation is entirely analogous for what you would do if you would like to derive, so to say, the equilibrium spin wave algebraic decay at small temperatures of the world.
If you are at equilibrium, it's very well known that there is a heating length and there is a phase coherence length, which is exponentially large in the weakly interacting region. And then, if you are on a distance scale, which is much larger than the heating length, but at the same time much smaller than the phase coherence.
And
you have this what we call quasi-condensate or something. Yes.
I mean, are you referring now to this solution, this like a scale where Bogoliubov theory breaks down?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, okay. This you have it also in equilibrium?
Yes,
of course. But okay, and you can ask the questions and say what comes first here.
Yes, but you know, the thing is that people who just, especially newcomers to the field, they say there is a trivial Bogoliubov theory where you introduce condensate wave function and so on. This one breaks. But what is done is that the people work in the density phase representation. Yes. This is, for example, I think you were writing somewhere there that the field operator is square root of the density multiplied exponent in the power I phase, and this one does not break.
Yeah. No. What I'm well aware of is that there is a long wavelength scale where the Bogoliubov theory breaks down.
Trivial Bogoliubov theory.
The trivial Bogoliubov theory breaks down.
The density phase representation works, and you obtain the Bogoliubov spectrum for whatever small k.
I'm fully aware of it. Yeah. That's no problem. You get so to say the point of what you're making is that even if you go beyond that long wavelength scale, for example, your superfluid velocity remains finite. That's the point you're making. Yeah? So therefore, superfluidity is present even at asymptotic large distances in an equilibrium system. Fully agree. But this is a different thing. This is really pinpointing that this lambda parameter measures how strongly you drive the system out of equilibrium. And just realizing that this non-equilibrium effect becomes even more important when you coarse grain to large distance. Actually, we've also seen it numerically. So.
But you know, what you see numerically is a different thing. But if you are pronouncing the word stationary state, somehow this makes me thinking that the feeding rate is compensated by the loss rate, or the other way around. The loss rate is compensated by the feeding rate.
In some sense, there is it's a bit more nonlinear effect there. That I mean, okay, you so to say this, the potential landscape is unstable around zero, and then the nonlinearity of this two-body loss stabilizes this problem.
Yeah, but this type of things, people have done it for three-body recombination terms and so on a long time ago. Yes.
But I
it's much simpler situation because he doesn't want to consider a situation when it has a real condensate where the lasing is taking place, because condensate means that you start emitting coherent light. And if you don't have condensate, then I don't understand what we're speaking about, because there is no scale beyond which you can start speaking about condensate.
That's right. I mean, but the same, so to say, remark can be made for the description of, so to say, how would you derive the, so to say, thermal equilibrium.
You cannot derive thermal equilibrium in a system which is driven and dissipated.
Yeah, good. But I'm saying that in the limit, when I take this limit, lambda equals zero, then everything of this, what is known about this equilibrium, is reproduced in this approach. And it's actually, and the point is, it's exactly the standard approach in this case. But if we take this perturbation from equilibrium into account, then the picture gets modified.
What is it? Noise or not? What do you call perturbation from equilibrium?
Perturbation from equilibrium means, so to say, that I cannot write, so I have the equation for this, which has somehow this dissipative part and some Hamiltonian part, as some reversible part, and some noise. Equilibrium conditions, really, let me just make it more really to the point. So we are starting from this Gospodarski equation, or stochastic one. Just a second. And then equilibrium is the situation where HD is proportional to HC. And that is reflected if I plot the imaginary parts and the real. So this is imaginary.
Wait a second, before real and imaginary. Psi equal to zero is solution of this equation that right hand side vanishes, right?
Sure.
So you have another stationary solution. Then you have condensate.
Yeah.
Then you have.
Yeah, good, but I mean, this condensate, I mean, for example.
Do you have another stationary point except trivial one, which is psi equals zero?
Yeah, on the mean field level. But then I look at, so to say, long wave. In any two dimension, I need to look at this correlator to determine if there is really a condensate. Yeah, on short distances, of course, you have a huge occupation of one single quantum state. Yeah, but if I want to know, well, what is the asymptotics of this correlator, I find saturation only in three dimensions, even in equilibrium. In two dimensions.
Or you find, this is called one-body density matrix.
The one-body density.
But by civilized people.
That's
in two dimensions, you find that it's a constant.
This is actually recorded. Civilized people.
Okay,
so
maybe
in two dimensions, at x tending to infinity, it will be constant at zero temperature.
In three dimensions. Or in two dimensions, zero temperature.
This is exactly what I said.
But this is finite noise level, finite temperature like situation. So let me just point this out. This last, if we have this proportionality, all the couplings, yeah, all the ratios have to lie, have to have the same ratio. And if I have non-equilibrium, yeah, I have such a situation. These couplings spread somewhere, yeah. And the reason is really the dissipative dynamics and the coherent dynamics have nothing to do with each other. They come from completely different resources. Yeah, you pump it from outside with some single particle pump with another strength, the two-body loss. So that is really, the system cannot find an thermal equilibrium. It will find a stationary state, but this stationary state is not thermal equilibrium.
Again, I'm sorry, if you consider equation, left-hand side, yeah.
I mean, everyone is invited to.
I have to cut it. I encourage that you continue, but
yes.
Just
thank you.